Good evening, everyone. Last week, we talked about lobotomies, one of the earlier attempted treatments for mental illness, and this week we'll talk about another treatment discovered around the same time in the early 1900s, but which has stuck around for much longer, namely convulsive therapy. We begin this week in 1934, when alienists working in asylums noticed that some of their patients improved after they had seizures. That year, Hungarian psychiatrist Ladislas J. Maduna decided it would be worth trying to induce seizures in his patients to reduce those psychiatric symptoms. At first, he tried camphor, which was a wax that was used as a food additive or embalming fluid, which does not sound super safe. Then he moved on to using metrazole, a stimulant drug that causes seizures at high doses. Maduna did actually find that psychotic symptoms tended to diminish after having a seizure. Treating psychiatric symptoms with seizures came to be known as convulsive therapy. And just 3 years later, the first international meeting on convulsive therapy was held in Switzerland, which is a really fast turnaround for having international meetings about anything. Within a relatively short time, convulsive therapy became common alongside coma therapy and likewise carried serious risks. I probably don't need to tell you this, but seizures are quite dangerous. Metrazole, the drug being used, would at high doses first cause patients to feel a sense of impending doom, followed by an uncontrollable seizure. Keep in mind, too, this was being done for patients who were already suffering serious psychological illness, and then add that feeling of doom and anxiety on top of that. The experience was likely very, very stressful for patients. Psychic damage was not the only concern, though. Seizures can be quite violent, and a study in 1943 found that 43% of patients who underwent this seizure therapy literally had fractures in their backbone as a result. Yikes. Unsurprisingly, psychiatrists began looking for better ways to induce seizures, which is a real weird sentence to say out loud. In Italy, a neuropsychiatry professor named Ugo Cerletti was experimenting with inducing seizures in dogs by shocking their heads, and wondered if he should maybe try it out on humans too. However, his colleagues persuaded him not to shock a bunch of people in the head, which I applaud as a reasonable and cautious approach. That wasn't the end of it, though, and later Cerletti was buying some meat, and learned from his butcher that pigs were often shocked in the head before slaughter, since it would render them into some kind of anesthetic, coma-like state. The butcher is certainly not where I would expect new scientific discoveries to come from, but it worked out. Cerletti wondered if he should perhaps combine his previous research with this new thing he learned, and use electrical shocks to put people into that anesthetized state first, and then induce a seizure, perhaps gaining the benefit of the treatment, while avoiding the literal back-breaking downsides, since they are anesthetized. This time, his colleagues did not persuade him out of it, and as per usual in this season, you have to keep in mind that treatments for severe mental illness basically didn't exist. And while putting electricity through patients' heads sounds like some mad scientist plot, psychiatrists were desperate for true treatments. Cerletti decided the risks were worth investigation. In 1938, Cerletti asked his colleague Luchino Bini to build the first device designed to shock humans as medicine. I imagine that must have been a very strange request to receive on Bini's part. Together, they tried their new device out on patients, and it actually worked just as they had hoped. Patients would be anesthetized by the shock, have no memory of the procedure, but would also still show significant improvement in their psychiatric symptoms after waking up, just like with the old metrazole drug-induced seizures. But electroconvulsive therapy, as this new procedure came to be known, was much better than metrazole had been. It was cheaper, there were no feelings of impending doom, no more broken backs, or at least less broken backs, and it was much more convenient, just requiring a quick flick of a machine on and off, as opposed to medication and a bunch of monitoring. One of the major side effects of electroconvulsive therapy was amnesia, but a lot of doctors actually thought this was a good thing, since patients didn't have to remember being shocked. Electroconvulsive therapy was also highly effective, especially for depressed patients, with reports of some being much happier after even just one session. While the risks were not completely gone compared to the other treatments of the day, which we've talked about, electroconvulsive therapy was a lot safer for patients and was actually an effective treatment, unlike coma therapy or lobotomies. Some of these risks will be mitigated by newer technologies, like drugs that help patients convulse more safely, and more precise devices that use as little electricity as possible. To this very day, electroconvulsive therapy still sees use for the treatment of depression, manias, or schizophrenia, often when medications have failed. And despite electroconvulsive therapy's great and early success, it did not receive any Nobel Prizes, unlike fever therapy and lobotomies. But it genuinely helped people and replaced a much more dangerous treatment that came before it. However, by the 1950s, electroconvulsive therapy is basically the only good treatment option available, although as you know, lobotomies and comotherapy were widely in use at the time. Thankfully, some new treatments are about to be discovered, and next week we'll talk about the first medications that really reduced symptoms of mental illness. As always, thanks for listening. If you'd like to tell me anything, just reach out with the links in the show notes. Thanks also to Jojo Tang for editing, Angie Lee for our lovely cover art, and MuseOpen for this music.